Well, last night was the Academy Awards, apparently seen in over 220 countries worldwide, which is somewhat good, because last night, artists expressed their discontent with the Trump administration and the policies thereof. Now, the world certainly knows that we are discontent here in our own country, and that more than half of us in this country feel that way. So, that's a good thing. Also, the rest of the world, the other 220 countries, should also realize that in this country, the United States, people do express themselves and say what's on their mind and have the ability to do that. We just hope that it stays that way. But I don't want to talk about that today, so I won't, so forget what I said.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Do you want some something?
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the show that you decided to click on.
A cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you very much, Jules. Welcome to the program. I am Ron Van Dam. I'm a little horse today. Yesterday, I was a little cow. The day before that, I was a little anteater. Isn't that interesting how I can be different animals on different days? Some people are the same animal for months and months and months. Me, I change my animals every day. How are you? Good to be with you. I have a little gripe, and it's so petty, I can't believe it. Sometimes, isn't it interesting how we hold on to these petty little things that mean absolutely nothing at all, where the obvious answer to the problem is, let it go, get beyond it, move on. Happened to me. I had a guest staying in my house yesterday. Actually stayed in my house on Saturday night, left yesterday. And I, because I'm a nice guy, in the guest bathroom, I put out a little tube of guest toothpaste. Those little trial size things that you get in a CVS or a Walgreens, like for 50 cents, those trial things. Like, try the toothpaste. Why do they make trial sizes of Crest toothpaste? Is there anybody on the planet that hasn't tried Crest toothpaste? What is this? I know what toothpaste is. This Crest. I've never heard of it. Give me a break. You've all had it in your mouth. If you say that's what she said, I'm going to get angry. Anyway, so I have this small little tube of Crest toothpaste. I'm a nice guy. I believe every guest in my house should smell nice orally. I believe, sounds like some type of a patriotic thing. I believe that everyone in my house should have toothpaste. Now, most people travel with toothpaste if they're going to stay over at somebody's house, don't they? Did you get the toothbrush? Yes. Did you bring the toothpaste? Oh my God, I forgot. How can you forget that? If you can remember to pack a toothbrush, you must remember to pack toothpaste. Anyway, unless there's an expectance that I will have the toothpaste. So as a nice guy, because, man, I'm nice. I'm really nice. I am so nice that I will actually put out a small tube of toothpaste for my guests. If you ever stay over at my house, and I guarantee you that's not going to happen, I will actually put out a tube of toothpaste for you. That's about it, but I will do that. So I had the little tube there sitting next to the sink, and it was apparently used. And here's how I know. Because after this guest left, I went into the guest bathroom to clean it up because, God knows, there's probably crap all over the walls. You don't know how these people are. You know, maybe their aim isn't good. I don't know them that well. I mean, well enough to stay in my house overnight. I guess I do know them that well. It's not like I have a sign outside of my house. Bed and breakfast, come on in, I don't care, free tube of toothpaste, air conditioning, and free cable, and Wi-Fi. I don't do that. So I go into the bathroom, and I'm cleaning up the guest bathroom, and I notice the tube of toothpaste is gone. Now, my first inkling was, and I don't know what inkling means. Well, I do, but I don't think I've used inkling ever. I looked in the trash. It's something that I do. And I thought, well, maybe there wasn't much toothpaste left in the tube, and they threw it into the trash. I had to know. I just had to know. So I went rifling through, inkling and rifling, two words, again, that are very infrequently used. I don't believe I've ever used them. So I'm looking through the trash, and there's some pretty gooey junk in there. I mean, bathroom trash, there's a lot of lotion involved. So anyway, I'm going through it. My hands are getting sticky in a hole, but there's no tube of toothpaste. These people, this person, took my tube of toothpaste. Now we get into a whole different concept. Was it taken on purpose or by mistake? Let me tell you something. Nothing is by mistake necessarily. I believe that it was consciously confiscated by the people. And when I say confiscated, taken off of my hands. Somewhere on this planet, there is a person who stayed in my house who has my little tube of toothpaste. For some reason, this bothers me. Enough to sit here in this chair on this particular program and express this to you in an angry... Did you hear my voice go up? In an angry... Did you hear that? And I'm way over 13. In an angry, malicious manner. That's how much it means to me. I'm not on any kind of drug like that. I'm just a little bit pissed. Now, on one hand, that's absolutely ridiculous, absurd to be bothered about something like that. On the other hand, I guess things aren't so bad if I have the time and the energy to get upset over someone taking a small tube of toothpaste, probably, then I guess I don't have any large problems right now. Because if I had a large problem, this toothpaste thing would be insignificant. So I'm glad in that sense. What, do you think I'm grumpy?
Yes, of course you could have a podcast show host who's congenial and conversational and talks to you like you're both on the same level discussing the issues of the day. But come on, isn't having a grumpy old bastard who hates just about friggin' everything way better? This is the Ron Van Dam Show.
Do you want me to hold up a puppy dog?
Aww.
Yeah? I can do it. I'm warning you. I'll hold up the puppy dog again if I have to.
Whatever.
All right, never mind. Eep, beep, beep-de-dee-de-dee, beep, 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 beep-de-bee-de-bee, beep-de-bee-bee. Coming up later in the program, Mark Stoner joins us. He is going to tell you about stuff, about being an entrepreneur. Mark Stoner joins us momentarily. He's interesting. He's written a book, Blue Collar Gold, something like that. I have no idea, but that's coming up later in the program. What a name, huh? Mark Stoner. I think if your name is Mark Stoner, you probably wouldn't be working for anybody unless you change your name, because who's going to hire somebody named Mark Stoner? Now, Mark's a very nice guy, but that last name Stoner? Now, see, Mark Stone would be a powerful name, like a rock, the solid last name. Who's the president of your organization? Mark Stone is our CEO. Oh, I know. That's very intimidating, Mark Stone. I bet he's a stone man. I bet it. We call him the stone man. But if you put an R at the end of that, all of a sudden, man, it's like really, really Mark Stoner. Your CEO is not going to be named Mark Stoner. Drop the R, Mark. Worse than the R at the end of stone would be a D. Mark Stoned. That just won't fly anywhere. And I know they're legalizing marijuana all across the country. Let me tell you something about that. Recreational marijuana, by the way, which either you legalize it or you don't. We don't start putting adjectives. Well, there's medical marijuana, there's recreational marijuana, there's after-dinner marijuana, there's just fun marijuana, there's movie marijuana, there's having people over to your house and they're really not funny until I get stoned marijuana. Anyway, this is getting out of hand, and I'll tell you why. Because people say, well, alcohol is legal. Why shouldn't marijuana be legal? They're both recreational fun things that mess up your mind. Yeah, but we already got one is the point. We already got alcohol. That's enough. Half the country dies in auto accidents every year. I think Trump told me that. Someone told him and he made it up, so it's true now. Half the country dies in automobile accidents due to alcohol and drunk driving. So as long as that's legal, let's legalize everything that can kill people immediately, because it's only fair. It's only fair. Let's just make it worse. Of course, people say, well, it's not like that because when you smoke marijuana, you get paranoid and you go 5 miles an hour because you think everybody behind you in the car behind you is probably an unmarked police vehicle. And it probably will be. And you're probably right. The only thing is, if I'm in front of you stopped at a traffic signal, you may not stop because your foot won't be able to find the brake quick enough. I know that's true. I've been there. Not that I've crashed into another car, but I've been stoned to the point where I couldn't find stuff really fast. If someone gave me a reaction test when I was stoned, I would have said, don't even give me the test, man. I'm going to fail for sure. Don't even bother giving me test. I just can't deal with it right now, man. And I can't deal. There are good things about pot. I guess the best thing is that you suddenly love everybody. You get paranoid, which is the way it kind of should be. If you don't go through your life somewhat paranoid, you're delusional. So that's good. It incites paranoia, which is, I guess, good. And the other is you love everybody. You can be angry. You can be you're the biggest asshole I ever met in my life. But I love you, man. I love you, man. I just love you, man. I don't know why, man, but I know why, because you're smoking pot and you're high. So I guess that's good. Maybe Trump should get high. Maybe he'd start to feel a little something for fellow human beings other than his bank account. What a nasty man. What a nasty man. Anyway, yeah. Oh, my God. The other thing is, and I've said this so many times, when you smoke cigarettes, you inhale, you blow it out your mouth, sometimes your ears, sometimes your nose. It's kind of funny, actually. But when you smoke marijuana, you inhale it, and the idea is to hold it in your lungs as long as you can. There's an idea that's medically fun. Take some smoke, hold it in your lungs as long as you can. That's got to be the healthiest idea ever. Health to you, my friend. Enjoy your iron lung by the time you're 35. Because once it's recreationally available, it's going to happen. It's just like that when they legalize basketball as a recreation sport. That's not even true. It's always been legal, and it's just fine. I never understood this recreational stuff. What is that about? Recreational marijuana. For a lot of people, it's recreational drinking too. Bob, you seem to be shit-faced. Hey, but it's recreational. Then you got medical marijuana. How many people have gotten drunk drinking medical alcohol? I mean, I got this medical whiskey. You see, I have a condition. It's called everything sucks. And in order to self-medicate, I use Jim Beam and Johnny Walker, two of my favorite people. But it's not, I don't do it recreationally. I do it for medical purposes. Right. Medical marijuana. Yeah. And the big thing was it cured or it made glaucoma better or cured glaucoma. Could you come up with something that's a little more convincing than that? Because perhaps you can take some pills or wear glasses. How about that idea? No, man, I'd rather get high. I'd rather solve it that way. I feel a little cold coming on. Where's my medical marijuana with the codeine in it? I'll see that on the shelves pretty soon. Forget taking Airborne or Dristan or something. You just smoke some medical marijuana. Hey, man. I don't know if my cold cleared up, but I don't really care. Did I ever tell you? I love you, man. I just love you, man. I love you, man. I just love you, man. Did I ever tell you I love you, man? I love you, man.
You're listening to The Big Show with Ron Van Dam. I wish I could listen to it, too. But sometimes he says bad words.
It's the Ron Van Dam Show. We do this every single weekday. It's a new show. I know. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with you? Don't put it on me. You're listening to it. You can find us on the Podbean Network, NewEnglandBroadcasting.com. You can find us on MetroSouthPodcasting.com. You can find us on iTunes, TuneIn Radio. And some radio stations actually have the balls to air this, but only when I don't curse, which is a lot. I don't curse that much. I spent some time on Facebook yesterday. Every time I do, rather than feel connected to people, I feel like I'm disconnected because I don't want to be any of those people on Facebook. Apparently, They have a lot of problems. They have medical problems. They're angry about everything. Similar to me. It's like everybody I know is expressing themselves in a manner in which I don't care. I don't know. I still don't get it. Is it because I'm not a millennial? Because I'm older than six? What is it that I'm missing? Why do people feel the need to express themselves on a daily basis? Oh, wait a minute. That's what I do. Maybe I'm just too lazy to type it out. You know, here in the New England area, in the Boston area where our studio is, and where my abode is located as well, it didn't snow that much. We had two significant snowstorms, both coming close to 2 feet. I don't know how much snow we've had so far this season, and I believe the season is over, the winter's over kind of for snow, but I don't think we had more than maybe, 4 feet of snow, maybe 5 feet of snow, something like 60 inches. It's like that's not much in the snow world, the world of snow. But, you know, it's a relatively small amount of snow. I was driving around my neighborhood and around many of the towns in the area. What's up with snow plows? What's up with that? Why, for the smallest amount of snow, do snow plows have to destroy all the grass? What is it? Is there some kind of... Maybe someone should invent for all the towns and cities where it snows some type of device that tells a snowplow driver when you're digging into somebody's lawn. And of course, snowplow drivers are very sensitive. Very, very sensitive, because it's snowing outside. They're out in the grueling weather, slipping and sliding, working their asses off, while we're all safe inside of our homes with a cup of hot cocoa, supposedly, watching some type of mindless television show or listening to some mindless podcast. So I believe that snowplow drivers are very sensitive. At the same time, as they're doing this job, they're making tons of money. Would you like me to plow your driveway? Sure, how much? $20,000. What? Well, all right, don't get it plowed. It's up to you. Wow. It's like a mafia of snow removal. And because it's quite difficult and they can't see what they're doing because it's snowing outside and there's a lot of snow, they tend to plow into your lawn. And I'm not blaming them, because they all do it. They all do it. They all do it. And I've never plowed a driveway, so I don't know what I'm talking about. So give me that leeway. All I know is when the season is done and the snow melts, you've ripped up my lawn. And the town snow plows that do the streets, you've ripped up everything along the curb. I mean, it looks like some gigantic 5,000-pound beaver was at work. It's not pretty. And my question is, could there be some kind of technology for snow plows that prevents or reduces the amount of lawn damage? Well, Ron, what's up with you and your precious lawn? It's just grass coming out of dirt. It regrows. It's not like your hair, which apparently doesn't regrow. What's the big problem? The big problem is this. For people that have nice lawns, it doesn't just come out of the ground nice. You have to put fertilizer in. You have to mow it. You have to coddle it, nurture it, seed it, aerate it. Do all these kinds of things to it. Mulch it, bulch it, crulch it, whack it and weed it and grub it, take the grubs. I mean, there's tons of things you have to do to your lawn to have it look really, really nice. And that costs a lot of money. Thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars every season. That's why when the plows come along and it snows a little bit and all that work is just chopped up and mowed up and just tossed all over the place, you get a little pissed. Hey, I invest a lot of money in that. You tore it all up. So that's my complaint about the snowplow driving. And they're good people, man. I think they're good people. There's nothing wrong with them. Many of my friends are snowplow drivers. They don't plow my snow. Oh, I don't do business with friends. What if something goes wrong? Then I've lost a friend. All right, come to think of it, big deal. Big deal. Now, I don't invent technology, so I don't know what to do about it, but there must be some type of device, some type of system where the lawn doesn't get dug up. I don't know what it is. I'm not sure. Perhaps, I don't know. I just don't know. I don't know, some type of beeping device where, all right, you've hit the end of the driveway and there's something beeps inside of the truck. I don't know. But I'm just thinking there must be something. What it is, I don't know. Mark Stoner is going to join us now. Mark is a snowplow driver. Wait a minute. No, that's not true. Mark Stoner smokes marijuana. No, that's not it either. Mark Stoner tells you how to turn your skill into a business that makes you a lot of money and that you can live off of. And there's nothing wrong with that. Be proud of what you find, something that you do well, and maybe try to go into business for it. Because with the economy the way that it was since 2008, people had no choice but to start their own businesses because there were no jobs to have. And a lot of them were successful. But that's not over, you see. You can still be successful doing something that you A, like, and B, are actually good at. And that's your passion. So Mark is going to talk to us about that. He's a fine individual. I don't know him personally. But let's talk to Mark right now. Let's find him. Entrepreneur Mark Stoner joins us. It's Blue Collar Gold, How to Build a Service Business from the Dirt Up. I'm listening very carefully because in the back of my mind, I think everybody wants to start a little business. This is the thing to do these days, is to have your own little business, either prominently or on the side, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. It's very... It's what America's about, you know. Let's get out there. Let's get to work. Let's do your thing. Let's figure out what you like to do. And you're right. It's very popular right now.
How important is it to have a great grasp of the internet? Are not all businesses predicated and actually solely dependent upon the internet?
Well, it's a good question. I don't know about if they're solely predicated on it, but in my case, I'm a chimney sweep, believe it or not, uh-huh. And in our business, the internet is a very big part of how people find us. But still, you'd be surprised how many people just word of mouth. And you know, these even social media things where, you know, you have neighborhood social medias and they say, hey, use this person, use this company. Right. And I think as much as anything, it's relationship building that you have to do with people. You've got to be a good service. If you answer your phone, you come to the door on time, you don't freak people out and scare them when you show up, you do good work, you know, you can build almost any business.
Interesting.
And that's in my book, Blue Collar Gold, How to Build a Service Business Up. Yeah. From the Dirt Up, we show people how to start from the very beginning all the way to running a multi-million dollar business.
That's great. You know, are people too impatient? it takes time to grow something, and I think a lot of people give up after a short period of time because it's not happening yet and probably won't. What's the waiting period? I guess it varies for various services, but it's not overnight, is it?
No, I've been in this business 31 years, and the first 17 years that I did the business, I was pretty much a one-man operation, literally building a business that was a job. If I didn't go in to do it, I didn't make any money. And it could be very easy to be short-sighted, and everybody's making billions of dollars developing the next app or the next game and the next Uber. And in the skilled services business, you can grow a business quickly. But there's no overnight success that I've really ever seen that's lasting true success. Yeah. But if you like what you do and you see that you're building it into a business and kind of figuring out how to hand off all your jobs to someone else and train other people, you can build a multi-million dollar business in 5 to 8 years from what I've seen and what I've helped other people do.
Interesting. Is it all, well, you said it's word of mouth and such. See, I'm in New England. What part of the country are you in?
Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay. Here, if you want a service like a carpenter or chimney sweep or whatever the case may be, a lot of people don't get back to you. And I find it amazing that there are many companies that just don't really seem to be too thrilled about even what they do. I think it's getting worse.
Well, that's a great point. I agree with you. You know, last year there were over 3 million blue collar jobs that went unfilled in the U.S. Yet there's millions of people unemployed, and so as a blue collar company, a lot of us struggle in getting employees to come in and people that can do the work that are willing to do the work. So therefore, when you call a service provider and they can't get to you or they don't return your calls, it's not that they don't want to do it, it's just that they're already overbooked. And so in my book, Blue Collar Gold, that's where the gold is. Because there's a lack of people, there's a huge opportunity. And if you can train people and get people excited about what you're doing, basically you can build whatever size business you want. Because just as you said, so many people have a hard time getting people to the door and return the phone call.
It's true.
Yeah.
Is a lot of it... It is amazing because so many people are complaining that they're not working, and you know half the country is unemployed, according to whatever he is, the president, I guess. But I don't understand why people aren't working if jobs are there. I don't get that. I don't understand it.
I think we've given it a bad stigma, right? I mean, when I was growing up, my parents said, "Hey, go to school, get a degree, so you don't have to do that kind of work." And we've classed blue collar work as almost like a second class citizen, or you don't want to do that work. You know, that's the consolation prize of life is you didn't get the white collar job, so now you're going to have to, you know, paint walls.
No, Mark, let me tell you something. I talk about this on the show all the time. I mean, I'm for education, but it's overblown in this country. There are most blue collar job owners make a ton more than white collars do. I'm telling you, that's a skill that you can't take away from somebody by a boss just being an asshole for a day. I mean, this is your thing, your skill. No one can take it away. I think blue collar is something that people don't recognize, but it's a goldmine of success.
You're exactly right, and that's totally the point of even the TV show that I was recently on, Blue Collar Millionaires on CNBC. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole premise of that is, hey, there's a lot of money and opportunity out there. If you're willing to get a little dirty, you know, actually do the work, there's a huge openings in almost any service business that you pick. You can build what you want, and we need to really recognize that in the U.S. We need more blue-collar services. You can't just go to the Internet and click a button and somebody fixes something at your house. You literally have to have somebody show up.
Correct.
And in that, we need to celebrate the blue-collar workers. We need to say, hey, this is our future. Let's get behind them, and let's not make it seem like such a second-class citizen sometimes, you know? I had one of my technicians in a house, and we were fixing a fireplace, and the father brought a son out to watch my technician work, and he said, "You see what this guy's doing? This is what you you'll have to do if you don't get a college education. And
oh,
he said
really?
It right in front of my technician.
Oh, man.
And it fired me up. But I called the guy. I said, you know, that is the wrong thing to say to your son. If he likes doing technical work or working with his hands, hey, let's get behind him and let's let him do that. Not everybody's happy going for a four-year degree. And a lot of people don't use the degrees they get, and they go into a lot of debt to get them. So
absolutely.
Why send everybody down that road? And so I really have an affinity for blue-collar workers, and I know what it is, and I know that this country needs it. And that's why I wrote the book,
yeah.
Blue-Collar Gold.
Let me tell you, and I'm sure you agree with me, if I walk into a bank and I sit down, I talk to a banker or a teller, or if I talk to a customer service person or someone like that, or someone on the phone, I can do all those jobs. A little bit of training, I can do all those jobs in a second.
Right.
You cleaning out a chimney, fixing a gas burner, fixing a toilet, doing plumbing work. I cannot do that. I respect that they have this skill. They're doing something that I call them in because I can't do it.
Right.
And that's not the same with white collar jobs. I think I could do most of those white collar jobs in a minute. So there's a certain pride to having a skill that not everybody can do.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, in the fireplace business, you know, I'm an expert in an area that very few people are, and I have the, you know, the joy to really literally help maybe save someone's life, save their property, and I'm an expert, and so when people, there's a good feeling about being a true expert at something, you know, they're the person that they're trusting, and so you're exactly right. And the more skill you have, the bigger barrier to entry into that area,
right.
So in chimneys, we're very specialized, very few people have the skill, so therefore, we can charge a good amount of money. My technicians make double or triple what the average, you know, college-educated graduate makes.
Absolutely.
And so why not, you know, look at this as an opportunity, a true opportunity that people need to go into?
True. All right, so you do that, and I guess a certain point when the business, when you are working for yourself, there's a certain point where with your knowledge and skills, then you do have to think a little bit more of the managerial end of it, a little more of the growing business end of it. And that's like thinking beyond cleaning a chimney.
Sure. So, you know, most blue-collar guys start off with some kind of skill that they can do. They know how to fix a car. They know how to mow yards. And they don't, many times they work their tail off. They get home at night. They're tired. They don't continue any kind of education. And they just do. They work, and they get tired. And that's where it kind of gets a bad name. But the truth is, I found my secret, one of my biggest secrets to success is what I did from 7 o'clock at night to about 1 to 2 in the morning, which was after I got home, kissed the wife, you know, ate dinner, relaxed for a minute, I got right back into reading books, listening to audiobooks, reading articles about business, about leadership, about self-development, and and become better at what I do. And that's the big disconnect in a lot of blue-collar guys.
Yep.
They just keep doing what they do.
Yep.
They don't want to have employees. They don't want to learn finance or accounting.
Mm-hmm.
So the key to it is to hire all that stuff out.
Yeah.
Just keep doing what you love to do, but hire and train, and really train yourself out of a job as quickly as you can once you're an expert at it, and train other experts. And be a good leader. Be a good guy. Be a good woman to work for. And that's the secret, is to just understand you have built a job, and what your next step is to build a business. And a business works without you. That's what a business is. And that's where the difference is in most blue-collar guys out there. They just know how to do their thing.
That's perfect. Perfectly put. And you pick up the book, you read it, it stimulates you, it makes you say to yourself, why shouldn't I do what I do? Why shouldn't I find my niche and go and do it? This book gets you started. It's great, and I appreciate you even writing this thing, to be honest with you. It's called Blue Collar Gold, How to Build a Service Business from the Dirt Up, and that's an accurate title for the book. Mark, thank you so much. How do we get the book, and where do we get more information?
It's on Amazon.com. It recently was on a little bit of a back order after the TV show, the Blue Collar Millionaire TV show on CNBC. It sold out, but they're restocking it. And it's also, I have a website, markstoner.com, and you can go there and find out more information. I also have a thing called Blue Collar University where we train, teach people one-to-one how to build a service business, and they come in and we show them how to do it. So you can get information at markstoner.com.
Extremely cool. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Ron. I appreciate you.
Take care, Mark. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I'll be back with you again tomorrow. Until then, I wish you peace, because God knows we're going to need it. I'm all right. It's okay. I'm all right. I'm fine. I'm all right.
Whatever.
Oh, thanks for caring.